Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. We have another post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. It's Monday evening. It's Edwin, or should I say Rooster Man. Hi, Edwin.
Rooster Man. Martin, did we jinx Boris Johnson after our episode last week, the Parliament House over there just did not want to pallet the 50-year loans? What was going on?
Well, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? They've now got 11 candidates for Prime Minister. 11, can you believe it already? And more to come, potentially. And they're all trying to work out whether they should cut tax or whether they should not cut tax and how much they should cut tax and all those good things. Yes, I think bye-bye, Boris.
Well, look, for these candidates, we gave ScoMo great advice before the election and he didn't follow our advice. He should have upped his ante to 50% stake in the purchase of a new property with a first home buyer. But he didn't follow us. And look, he got ousted. Yeah, Boris Johnson, got ousted for not. I know. Yeah, he probably didn't follow part of our advice as well. But then again, Martin, it's all shenanigans. Everything's going on, and I almost got evicted from. The Blue Mountains myself. it's all happening.
Yeah, well, that's why I mentioned Rooster Man, right? Because the rooster got out and presumably it was making a hell of a noise, was it?
No, oh, it was terrorising the neighbourhood for two days. I was out there at 4.30 in the morning, 4.33 on the dot, the little bastard decides to crow. I was out there trying to find out where he was and he's, because he got out and he went to the front, down to the front of the property, and the neighbours were not happy. 4.33 in the morning, he was crowing away and he's perched two-thirds of the way up the biggest pine tree in the front yard.
You could set your watch by it. Did you get him back?
Yeah, look, I did. I figured I tried to sort of, coerce him to come. I mean, he stayed around the property. He didn't venture off too far, but still, he's loud, very, very loud. Yeah. And, I'd sort of try to coerce him with a bit of food in the first day. And I almost got him. I almost had him, but, it was too quick, too fast for me. And then on the second day, I figured, you know what? I'm not going to feed you. I'm not going to feed you at all. And then eventually he just followed me back to his, to the chook pen. Now I've corralled him all, jailed him up. He's not getting out. He's not getting out. And if he does get out, it's because Dusty or Evan have given him some wire cutters.
Well, it's quite a good analogy for the old property market at the moment, right? It's going, well, what's going on? It's all sort of a bit weird, isn't it?
Look, it is. It's all happening. Look, it's getting weirder by the day, and you and I seem to be talking about all this weirdness and what goes on and all these conspiracy theories that are coming to pass, and that we'll talk about a couple more later on in the show as well. But, now they want to launch a Monopoly game with Parramatta, mate. Go figure. Parramatta, is going to make it's going to have a global audience. All looking at Parramatta. I just want to know whether or not they're going to put Opal Tower on the board. I want Dildon Towers at Westmead on the board. And I also want the Skyrise and the Imperial Towers as well to be on the board. I mean, these are obviously towers that have got major issues with them. I want them on there. And I was just, after I sent you the our draft for today, then I started thinking, you know what, maybe we should point out that, if you recall, John McGrath said that there'd be two beaches along Parramatta River. I want those on there as well.
add them all. And I'm sure that we could, enhance it with some extra 3D cracks and all sorts of wonderful things, right? Just to, in the spirit of the board.
Yeah, in the spirit of the board. And if you, you could introduce some new novelty cards as well. Yeah, you, a bonus. You get rectification work on your building for the cladding, flammable cladding, or you could go the other way, go to jail, go directly to jail, give the bank all your money. Did not pass go.
Yeah, well, you know, I always knew that Paramantha was the center of the universe. Now it's been confirmed.
It is. It is. Look, it is. It was a conspiracy theory before, Martin, but yeah, it is. It's on. It's 2022 never ceases to amaze us, and it continues to provide, and I'm sure it will continue to provide great entertainment, with regards to the real estate industry. I'm sure of it. What do you think?
Oh, I think that's absolutely right, and you know, those beaches and everything else with the floods, it could be quite interesting. But you know, things are surprising. This is the love affair between Australia and China. Is it back on?
Look, it's back on. The heat is on. Yeah, the heat is on, Martin. It's on. It's off. It's on. It's off. Yeah, I wish. Yeah, two-way Albert. Well, maybe that's why they call him two-way Albert. He's got to make up his mind. But look, the love affair is on, and what our witch chatterers have been talking, it's been hot over the weekend. It's been this news article in the mainstream over there, and it talks about the ambitious push to bring 200,000 migrants into Australia each year, as the industry boss describes this the serve labor shortage in the economy as the worst it's been in 50 years. There you go. The little brothers and the little sisters are on the way, Martin.
Right, and who's the photo?
Oh, that's what's that? McKellar. He's the CEO, I believe, of the ACCI.
Yeah, absolutely right. So there you go. The solution to all our problems is more migrants. Well, there's a surprise.
Look, I'm going to put it out there. We might call it a conspiracy theory, Martin, or you never know, it might come to pass. But I'm calling price rises at the end of the year to coincide with all these little brothers and little sisters coming over into the coming over to Australia. I mean, look, that's one of our levers, one of the main ones that we said that the government was really going full throttle on, and this love affair with China, it's just really opening up their ways, and it's. Look, it works both ways, and it helps both sides because, as you know, there's over 10 million, university graduates that have literally got no employment. They just left university not too long ago, and they've got no employment. So there's a lot of, we said and we've spoken about the fact that China needs to export its unemployed into other countries in order to for them to be gainfully employed, because they're causing a lot of issues in mainland China. So look, it's going to be, and we need them over here. Now, some might say, university students, what are they going to be doing over here? Well, look, I've caught up during the week with doctors, homeopaths, and these are Chinese little brothers in the different trades that I've in the different sectors that I've been dealing with over the last week. And some of these people are doctors. They've graduated from first tier city universities, and they're working here as gyprockers, painters and the like, because there's just nothing, no jobs for them over there. So look, with all these people that are going to be coming, and I say going to be coming, not maybe coming, I'm calling property rises in the northern regions of Sydney, and where the Chinese appetite is in the northwest regions and in the upper north shore at the end of the year, and also Guildford, Fairfield, Liverpool, and Maryland.
Okay, well, we'll hold you that, and we'll see what happens, because at the moment prices seem to be going in the other direction. So it could be the switcheroo that everybody's hoping for. Who knows?
Well, there's a reason, Martin. There's a reason. It's because the local WeChat chatterers have been full on. They've been hot. And with these news, with the news of this love affair back on again with our governments and the CCP, it seemed, and the main and the Chinese government, well, they're very, very hopeful that the rooms in the makeshift boarding houses are going to be back to 150% occupancy, and the areas that they're looking at, and they're looking at very closely to purchase homes, is Guildford, Fairfield, Liverpool, and Merrimack, for specific reason to accommodate the little brothers and the little sisters, in the in these rooms. And I mean, look, they're the areas that that we've been getting over the WeChat groups that they're looking into. And look, they're not necessarily saying buy now. They're basically waiting. But there are a lot of these Chinese investors, local Chinese WeChat chatter investors, are cashed up, and they are ready to buy. So they're waiting a little bit longer. But I would say within the next 3 months, you're going to potentially see a bit of movement in the bigger homes in these areas that I've just outlined, that I've just spoken about then.
And I guess that also means that they might be able to get some income from those rooms. What, $300 a week or something, right?
Man, that's it. $300 a week for the main bedroom with the en suite.
Nope.
You get the other, and depending on the size, that could even fetch up to $350, we're told. $275 for the secondary bedrooms. But what they're doing is they're actually introducing those portable bathrooms, shower toilets, similar to the one that we saw in but a little bit more portable. The one that we saw in Adelaide was more more fixed in there. But these ones that they're putting in there, that the WeChat chatterers are using, are more the portable bathrooms and toilets and kitchenettes. So $275 for those bedrooms, Martin, and accommodating two, a couple mainly. And the reason why they're choosing these areas is because these areas are predominantly not the homes are of a particular ethnicity, and also they're it's the way they describe it is that a lot of them are not owner occupied. The homes are not owner occupied, and they sit on a lot of the older homes sit on piers, so it's easy it's easier to work the plumbing underneath the homes, or introduce bathrooms to pretty much every single room in the household.
So an ensuite bathroom, actually a suite, an ensuite bathroom in every room, eh? That's pretty good. And of course, it puts the $400 a week from that one in Adelaide in perspective, doesn't it?
Oh, it puts it in perspective and puts it to shame. Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah. Well,
absolutely.
Why would you want to buy that one in Adelaide, that building in Adelaide, when you could have a buy a house in here and do the same? And look, in one instance, we're told that one of these people has already bought, and this is one of a chat in one of the groups. They even converted the laundry into a bedroom. Obviously, they're getting a lot less for it due to the size and the fact that it doesn't have a toilet. But they've converted it into a bedroom.
Absolutely, branches everywhere. Well, what about these numbers then? So we're going down a bit. What happened, Edwin?
Well, look, the numbers there they're rather interesting. Is it a case of the after effects of the flood, or I'm one to believe that it's more of a case that people are getting cold feet now? And as we said, unless you need to sell, have to sell, or you must sell, you're not going to stay on the market. And they're going to be waiting. And looks like the winter blues and the cold chills are biting in. And some people are starting to listen to our friends on the other side of the fence, and pulling the listings off market. I would think. Now, obviously, we're going to see the numbers will play out over. Yeah, we may see a bit more of a retraction tomorrow. But from the numbers that I got this morning to today, they drop and they're sort of starting to pick up a bit more. So it leads me to believe that they're not going to, not many more are going to come off market. But it's going to be interesting to see how many more properties come on market in specific regions, because some regions are reporting that some parts, some LGAs are reporting the a rising numbers, others are reporting a retraction. But overall, we've got only by a mere 100, 150 less on market than last week.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It looks like the houses have actually moved down. There's still many, many apartments, 8,973 apartments. That's pretty much top of the range, isn't it?
Yeah, look, and I think there's going to be a lot more with apartments. And as I said, it's between now and in spring. I don't see much of much movement other than a retraction in numbers. But in spring, it's going to be interesting with regards to houses. But with regards to apartments, they just keep on rising. They just keep on rising. And let's not forget, as I've been saying for a very, very long time, the marketeers, the spruikers, the property marketing companies, the agencies that mainly dealt with selling apartments off the plan to foreign investors, they're still drip feeding the apartments that they have on their database that are for sale. But sooner than later, as we said earlier on in the year, sooner than later, the numbers were going to rise, and they have been. And that's because if you don't have a tenanted, or you're not getting the rentals that you were getting back in 2019, and you're not back up to pre-pandemic rental levels, well, it's costing you a fortune to maintain them, given the fact that strata levies have gone up, the sinking fund contributions have gone up because of the issues and the costs to maintain these buildings, apart from the rectification work that builders or not have to do. The general maintenance of these buildings has just become more and more expensive again, because we don't have the labor force that we had pre-pandemic, pre-2020. And you could many companies were had very low paying jobs, or people being rewarded very very low for the work that they did. As I've been saying, and we've been talking about for a long time now, the rise in cost of labor is going to continue to increase. And until these 200,000 come over from China, Martin, it's only going to get worse.
Well, I can tell you, Ed, when I reran my numbers, having done the update for the interest rate movements from last Tuesday, and that's put about another 4 to 5% of investment properties in negative cash flow on a cash flow basis. So more property investors are losing money, either because they have got tenants that are not paying huge rents, or vacancies. So the proportion that are now losing money across the country on average is closer to 55, 56%. In other words, only 45% are actually making anything. And of course, without capital appreciation, investment properties, particularly apartments, really don't make a lot of sense at all.
No, and look, in at the best of times, a lot of these apartments never made sense anyway. Trying to make money out of negative gearing, you're hoping and praying that the price will go up, but it was just a vicious circle. It was going to come. The chickens were going to come home to roost, especially now.
The roosters are going to come home to roost. You hope. Now, what about these auction stats? Because they're also a bit wonky, aren't they?
They are. They're still a bit low, but what we're seeing is we're getting a lot more properties being from your experience and what I've seen on Twitter from various people that follow us and follow we follow. They're also experiencing a lot of no shows and auctions being basically being taken offline and going and reverting back to private treaty, because they're really getting no interest. What we're going to see a lot more of is the, as we've been saying also, is listings lingering on market for a lot longer than your typical 3 or 4 week campaigns. Now they're going back to what we would call in previous years the normal, which was a property could be on market for anywhere between 8 to 12 weeks. And let's face it, the agency agreements that many people are signing are a 12-week agency agreement anyway. So things just got shortened because you in a lot of times it was really the industry manipulating the market and creating a sense of urgency in order to earn a quicker commission. I mean, each to their own, and something that now we're going to go back to what we would call the normal market, and we're going to see a lot more listings linger on. The interesting things that we're going to also be see we're going to be also witnessing and seeing is that a lot of properties are going to have multiple agents trying to sell, because vendors are just going to get that desperate that they're going to try and give it to a number of agencies to sell. And look, from my days in that space, these are the markets that you don't really want to be the first agent taking the listing to market. You want to be the second or the third, because by then the vendors are really well and truly, as the expression goes in the industry, well and truly conditioned to accept a reality or a much lower price than where they started from.
Absolutely. Well, I did another show the other day on the anti-spruiking series that I've been doing, which is showing basically how much the asking prices are coming down. And, it's not uniform across the country, but there's a lot of evidence now that vendors are having to take a 10 to 15% drop from what they were originally starting from. And in fact, Victoria in particular looks to be really, really, really under pressure now, particularly in regional Victoria, as well as some areas in New South Wales. But interestingly, around here, for 2 weeks now, there were zero auctions because all the auctions were cancelled. And they were cancelled not a week or two before, but cancelled within 24 hours of when they were expecting to actually run the auction. So it's an interesting question. If you actually, as a vendor, have actually paid the marketing fees to the agency and they then cancel the auction because there's no shows or no expectation of a show, you don't get those marketing costs back, do you? So they're basically sunk costs.
You don't. And this is something, another black spot in our industry, unfortunately, and that is, and hence another reason why a lot of agents pushed for auctions as opposed to your normal campaigns of private treaty, and it's because they make out like an auction campaign demands a hell of a lot more money in order to advertise it. It's the same bloody format. The only difference, one of the main differences, is that you're paying an extra $600 to $800 for the auctioneer to turn up on the day, to take carriage of the sale on the day. And in my view, and I've written, I can't remember, I think it was on LinkedIn. I haven't been on LinkedIn for about 4 or 5 years, I think. But I wrote on LinkedIn for another magazine as to, if you're going to be paying that kind of money for an auctioneer, you would at least expect the auctioneer to turn up to the auction either an hour before the auction, or you would expect the auctioneer to visit the property a day or two before the actual auction in order for themselves to get familiar with the property. And as a matter of fact, there's a little bit of a legal conundrum there, because theoretically the auctioneer takes carriage of the sale on the day, and in the black and white letter of the law under our legislation, an agent cannot take carriage of a property unless they've inspected the property prior to taking it to market. So there's a technicality. It hasn't been challenged as yet, but that's my view. But at the end of the day, the way that agents or real auctioneers are being going around, and you see the ones that are on vocal on social media, how they talk about that they've done, conducted 10 auctions, 12 auctions, 14 auctions on a day, right, on a Saturday. Yep. When you include the amount of time traveling from one auction to another, you sort of think, my God, because in their views, it was a hot market and property sold within 5 minutes. And I thought, I think, really? You 5 minutes to negotiate the best price. Well, so they're the things that I guess I'm on the camp of the Neil Gemman side of things with regards to auctions. I don't really believe in them unless it really demands, the property really demands to be taken to auction. But outside of that, they're the fees that you pay, the extra fees. Everything else is pretty much the same in relation to the campaign that's demanded by under private treaty, Martin. So it's being a farce. It's a fallacy. It's a misnomer that agents are being able to basically spruik more money out of vendors because of this auction campaigns. And in some cases of late, one instance, a fellow paid $23,000 for a failed campaign. And he basically pissed that up in wind because it's got nothing out of it. And as a matter of fact, there were no participants at the Oki, and that was one, and another one, 15,000. So, and when you look at what was done for in terms of the marketing campaign, yes, the staging across the, on average, it's about $5,000-$6,000 per home, plus the auctioneer. That's rounded up to say 7,000. The advertising on the internet, domain and real estate on average charge 1,500 each. There's your 10,000. The rest goes into the pocket of the real estate agent or the real estate agent's office.
Absolutely. And one of the little cons is this cost of the video. I was talking to somebody the other day. They get charged a hell of a lot of money just to make a little 3-minute video of the property, right? I can tell you a story. When I actually put my property in the market years ago up in Sydney, I made the video of the property. The agent wasn't impressed.
No, and then you've got to wonder. You really want some of these melons on the video doing a tour of the property. Look, it's one of these costs that look. Thankfully, like when videos first came on, they were charging the videographers were charging or the agencies were charging upwards of $3,000 for a video. And the videographers were charging around 2,000. I mean, so there's always this, this bit extra that the agencies get for so-called administration fees, which is BS. Look, my tip on that is if you're going to be selling your property, you're going to be putting it on the market, ask for a trust account receipt. No matter how much money they're asking you for, or once you've got that sorted out, the amount of money that they're asking you to put in for marketing, that money legally has to go into the trust account because it's money that you've given in advance of works that have been proposed to going to get done, and you need trust account receipts and itemized. And again, also, unless agents disclose that they're getting a kickback or they're getting add-ons on the fees that they're being charged by, like domain uploads or real estate uploads or the videographer, photographer, or whatever else, unless they disclose it, well, you're not meant to do it. So it's got to be either disclosed or you're not meant to take any kickback. So that's something that, and most of all, if you ask for an itemized account from the sales trust account, I can guarantee you, Martin, that only 10% of real estate agencies in New South Wales would put the marketing funds in the trust account as per their regulations.
Absolutely, particularly now with the cash flow pressures that many of them are under, right? They actually see it as another another source of income, sort of working capital, when it's not actually, as you said, needs to go through the trust account. Yeah, no, very good. Now, one other little thing to talk about is this, right? So you actually you caught a screenshot of one of my shows that I did with the guy from Peter from Mozo today. We were talking about interest rates and the way that the banks were actually passing on all of those RBA costs. Well, at least on the mortgage side, but not necessarily on the deposit side, right? So who are the winners and who are the losers?
Yeah, who are the winners and who are the losers? Is it a game of chess or is it a game of checkers?
Yeah.
Either way, I think you're going to get stuck holding the bag. That was my takeaway from watching the show, Martin. It was rather interesting. It was very, very short, straight to the point. And at the end, who's going to be holding the bag? And or is it you that are going to be holding the bag at the end, or is it your first child, or your second, or the one, or your grandchild?
Well, that's the point about refinancing to 30 years, right? Because essentially, a lot of banks are doing that at the moment. So you might have a 22-year mortgage because it started at 30 years and it's counted down because you've run it down, right? But they'll offer you a refinance, but then they put it back to 30 again, right? Now, if you keep doing that, you get to 50 and 60. You've still got this blooming 30-year mortgage to pay off, and that's when you go into the intergenerational. So we might actually be above 50 years already.
Well, look, that's it. We spoke about it. Is it a conspiracy, or is it going to be a fact? we saw what we spoke about what was happening in over in England and the rumours about the financial windmills here in Australia. But yeah, who's to say? At the end of the day, do we really own it? Do we really own anything? And do we really have title to the land? Do we you know, everything's gone digital. Everything's gone. We don't know. We don't know what we own anymore. And we're meant to be happy.
Well, the point is, of course, that if it's mortgaged, you have effectively tenancy like abilities to enjoy the property as you're paying the mortgage, but you don't really own it. Not really, right? Because until you've paid off the mortgage, there's always somebody else who actually is ahead of you. So a lot of people don't realise that. They, you know, the number of times I have a big debate with people about the difference between renting and you know, paying a mortgage on a property, and the argument is, well, you know, eventually I'll own the property. Well, you will eventually, but you know, until you do, you don't, right? And the other point there is with this resetting of the term to 30 years, which is happening quite regularly at the moment. It's interesting, if you look at the product disclosure information that they provide, it's actually very vague as to precisely what's gone on and why the interest rates are what they are, and very importantly, what the new total interest to be paid is, right? A lot of them, it's not very transparent, and I have a feeling that that's quite deliberate. So what I'd say to people is, before you actually automatically jump at a refinancing that looks good, just ask yourself, what term is that mortgage now reset to? Because if you go from, say, 22 years to 30 years, what you're doing is signing up to pay a whole lot more interest for a longer period of time. And whilst your monthly repayments might come down a little bit, your monthly repayments now contain a greater proportion of interest than previously.
Yeah, so you end up paying more at more at the end. The other question is as you raised, is will you be able to refinance in another new period as well? And what will the exit strategies or the exit costs will be? And you know, how long will that make you start? Particularly when you're getting older, that would be more a scenario when you're getting older. Yeah, and then the other bigger question is where the hell did you get the extra money?
Absolutely right. Well, yeah, that's exactly right. And so you basically, you know, you move into superannuation land, and suddenly you have to take a huge chunk of your superannuation out to repay the mortgage, which means that you effectively end up on the government pension, right? Maybe that's good strategy, maybe it's not, but I'm not sure that it's necessarily what was originally in the intention of superannuation. And the other point there is that effectively I see a lot of people who are in that sort of 50, 60, 65-year age group, still with a really big mortgage and still with many years to pay on it, and it's now clear that they don't really have any intention to pay it off. What they want to do is to go on paying their mortgage into retirement, right, which changes the whole financial footprint of that part of life, not necessarily for the better in the rising interest rate environment.
Well, it's a crazy world. It's only going to get wackier, as we move along. So, and it's only the beginning of the new government. But at the new segment, Martin, what's wackier than a conspiracy?
Well, it's this one, isn't it? This was hilarious. This is Tom Pannis with one of his little videos. Well, you should explain what he was talking about, because I listened to it and I couldn't believe it.
Well, what we should do, what you should do, Martin, is that in this video, you should put up a title for this new segment, and then put real loud voices. What's wackier than a conspiracy? The real estate industry on drugs.
Yeah, well, it's pretty amazing what he said, because basically he said that there are a lot of real estate agents who are a little bit high, to put it politely.
That's what he says. Yeah, got party hard on Friday before open day on Saturday, before the biggest day for the industry on Saturday. I mean, I'm just paraphrasing. I'm not word for word. Yeah, he says if there was a lie detector, and a drug test detector introduced into the industry, or perhaps before you had an open house inspection, there would be, but a few real estate agents left in the industry. That is a bold statement to make. And all because, I mean, the screenshot I tried to get was, him, snorting something. And that was a screenshot that I got from his video. But he was pretty much saying that there's a lot of agents out there, a lot of agents out there, pretty much, flying high as a kite. But then, look, with everything that's happening over the last couple of years, Martin, it's not the only thing. Our legal eagles are telling us that the crime rate has increased dramatically in a lot of affluent areas as well. In your North Shores and in your eastern suburbs, where there's a lot of shoplifting and people, not shoplifting by mistake, but we're talking about, a lot of shoplifting and brand name items and getting caught because there seems to be a lot of financial stress with that, obviously, with a lot of the situations that a lot of families and people find themselves into, work-related issues or being dismissed from work because of different, new government policies mandated over the last couple of years. You've lost your job, so there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of family pressure. More, the interest rates going up, inflation, everything else. We've been talking about for a little while now. All that, puts a lot of pressure on households, and as such, to the point where, they're gonna be looking at all sorts of different ways in order to turn off, in order to try to cope with life, and we're going to see a lot more of what Tom discussed talks in his video, because again, we're going to go back to where we were in 2019, where properties were slow to sell, they were taking a hell of a lot longer to sell, and there weren't a lot of transactions. And as I've said over and over again, the real estate offices make money from transactions, not because the property market went up, and not necessarily because of the property market going down, but it makes money on the actual physical transactions because that is how they obtain a commission. And if there's not going to be a lot of sales because people don't want to buy in a, in a downward market, well then, we're going to go back to where we were in 2019, and the same scenarios, and there's going to be a lot of pressure. So I can only see these, type of not so much as being, not so much necessarily from a party point of view because they're celebrating, but also more from a stress point of view, using these so-called party drugs more to calm, calm a lot of the stress that they're going to be going through.
Yeah, and just as interesting, because in another panelist video at the weekend, he also, I think he did six auctions, and I think one actually worked and the rest didn't, right? And he was complaining about the fact that it was a very, very low success rate, and he regarded that as quite symbolic of how the market is currently behaving.
Yeah, and look, there's a lot of it's interesting because prior to you and I bringing up Tom on our segments, he wasn't getting a lot of views on his videos, and now I've noticed that his count rate has gone has tripled. As a sideline, I thought I'd bring that in, but it's quite interesting. Yeah, look, it is interesting. Some of the stuff that I see that I've been watching him, I've dealt with him, I've we've worked together on a couple of charity events, and so we've it is interesting. But he's pretty much black and white with a lot of the stuff that he says. You don't have to like everything that he says, but there are some good stuff that he says, and also some really bad stuff that he says. But look, each to their own. I'm sure. A lot of people like me, and there's a hell of a lot more that don't like me either. But for Dusty and the Rooster and Evan, well, maybe it'd be a lot less people liking me. So it's just one of those things.
Yeah,
But he does
absolutely.
bring he does speak some truths, and it is and he's not scared to put it out there. His audience is mainly real estate agents, obviously.
Yes.
I would say 95% of his audience are real estate agents because he does do a lot of training with them, and I get to see some of the stuff that's not necessarily online for public viewing, which I don't agree with, But that's, another rant for another day.
Well, look, and then what about this for another thing to talk about, right? The old glaring flaw in Australia's housing policies exposed as a $20 billion spend backfires. What do you make of this?
Well, you and I know, Martin, you and I know that we've got an international audience and we're influencing governments for a fact, and yet our local government have failed to watch our rants religiously on a Monday night. But I do have a hope. I do hope, and I do sort of. I'm persuaded to believe that our current Premier Dom, he Perrottet, he that he does watch our rants, and because he does follow us on Twitter. So all I can say, Martin, is who would have thought? How long have we been talking about this? How long have we been I've been talking about this flawed method of trying to help and assist first-time buyers into the property market, into having principal place of residence. I think the first article or thing I put out there was in 2002, 2003, and I was saying how flawed these grants were and what it was going to cause, and it was going to basically backfire. And what they find now, they're realizing after spending $20 billion. And I'm pretty sure that's only over the last few years. But all I can say, Martin, is I'm hoping that the current governments are watching our rants and start realizing that if you do the same thing that you did yesterday, today, well, then expect a different outcome tomorrow.
No, spot on. Well, the point is that this is relating to the Ahuri report on essentially, the whole issue of first-time buyer incentives, and in fact, they made a show on that today. I'll put a link below. But basically, they concluded that this whole process of first-time buyer grants and all these bribes, etc., and the stamp duty, actually, it wasn't really helping. Right? It lifts prices higher. Does more for those people already in the market because it lifts prices higher. Doesn't actually extend property ownership. And if you look at it over the long term, the proportion of people who are owning homes now is lower than it was 20 years ago, right? So on every dimension, it's a fail. And so they argue that we need a different suite of policies. But interestingly, they also said, because that was an international comparison between Australia and Canada and a few other countries, right, that most of the other successful programs were on the other side, on the supply side rather than on the demand side. So what we're doing is we're giving a small number of people money to be able to go buy into the market, lifting prices in the process. They're arguing a different route is required. And interestingly, the report also said that the problem you've actually got is you can't do too much of this, because if you do too much of it, one, it's highly inflationary because it lifts prices up. And two, what you find is that effectively you might help a few people, but it doesn't solve structurally the issues, which is precisely what we've been saying this for what, how many years, sir?
Exactly. And see, this is the thing that one of the things that I tagged Dom on Twitter, our premier on Twitter, I think it was in response to this when George put the tweet up. And again, it's something that we've been saying, and I've been saying for a while, is that if there were, the state governments really need to look very carefully at the local government's way of doing things and the cost incurred by developers and builders in order to do to develop a small parcel of land into medium density. I'm not talking about high density. I'm talking about small and medium density developments. There are homes out there that are absolutely dilapidated, and they need to be knocked down. And on those blocks of land, you can comfortably build duplexes, if not triplexes, to make it more affordable for people to stay within the communities that they've been living in for a number of years, which goes on to the supply. But there's so much red tape with local LGAs. So much red tape, so many hoops and hurdles that you have to go through and jump over, and there's crocodiles on the other end. Unless you've got brown paper bags along with you as lifesavers, you're gonna drown. You're gonna get eaten alive because of all the red tape. So, and this is why we're seeing a lack of supply. Now, a lot of people make the mistake of talking about supply as being apartments. You know, when you and I talk about affordable housing, we're talking about houses. Yep. You know, we're talking about houses on land, not as much these high-rise monstrosities that are just an eyesore. But this is the supply that's mostly needed in a lot of suburbs of Sydney. Again, as we've iterated before, as we've spoken about before, and that is to also make it more appealing for the empty nesters and the retirees to downsize and put their homes on the market, their 4 or 5 bedroom homes on, you know, on 750, 800, 900 square meters blocks of land, and move into a villa, move into a townhouse, move into a duplex within the community that they've lived in for the last 40, 50 years. But again, because of so much red tape, it's not happening. Creates this pressure. So the government's over the years, their solution to this is, as you said, their solution is to give people more money in order to incentivize them, coerce them, and dupe them into buying.
Bribe
them into buying. But the bracket, the price bracket that most home buyers would go into, conform or that these grants are targeting, that's a bracket that shoots up in price, and it goes beyond beyond the most of the reach anyway. So and then you've got to look at things further afield. You've got to look at homes that are again shoeboxes on 280 square meters of land and with no infrastructure. It's a mess. It is just being a policy mess for over two decades. Unless they start thinking seriously, as I tagged Dom on Twitter, I said you need to start putting more pressure on the LGAs to get rid of a lot of the red tape and the cost to develop. And let's face it, a lot of homes in a lot of suburbs, Martin, are getting old, especially the old fibro homes.
Yep. Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. And not only that, of course, but the other thing that we should talk about briefly is the home building costs soar as builders hike prices to protect themselves. Well, guess what? We've been talking about that for how long?
Yeah, look, since we discussed it, we break a lot of these news as well. From our WeChat chatter as well, they were telling us what's happening in China, and we were saying, we've been giving our audience tips and hints and telling them to prepare. And if you're going to do renovations or you're going to build, make sure you've got all your materials, pre-bought, pre-stored. And we also spoke about fixed price contracts. And a lot didn't. Some of my family didn't listen to me, and now they can't build. And if they do build, they can only build two-thirds of what they wanted to build, and they have to redesign in order to fit the money, to fit the cost that they weren't going to incur over a year ago, and it's just not enough. And it's only going to get it's only going to get more expensive before it gets cheaper.
Yeah, well, I was listening to somebody today talking about the fact that what they wanted to do was to bring fixed price contracts in, but with materials essentially allowed to rise. So hang on a moment. Is it fixed or is it not fixed, right? Who's taking the risk, right? And builders should be allowed to pass on costs of materials. Well, the problem is that if you're a purchaser and you've actually got a mortgage of a certain size, based on a certain set of assumptions, you can't suddenly magic another $50,000, $100,000 out of thin air just because the prices have gone up, right? So this is a real structural issue now, right? Who's going to take the risk of prices moving? You know, that's the question.
Yeah, exactly. That's the question. And the other question is Martin, there's the elephant in the room is the insurance. Insurance companies aren't going to, you know, be putting their hand up to insure a lot of the builders, a lot of the tradies in the future, unless they're paying huge amounts of money. Notwithstanding the issues that the natural disasters that we've been paying, the natural disasters, Martin. Yeah, the man-made natural disasters that have been, you know, that we've been going through. The insurance costs with regards to the homes and properties that are being affected. And I was thinking about it over the weekend, and a lot of these places, there are a lot of rentals in this place. There are a lot of investors that have been caught up in this. So I can only imagine once there's a clean out, once the waters retreat and the properties are cleaned out, people are going to be faced with a surge in costs of insurances. In some cases, I'm hearing, insurances going up from $3,000 right up to $30,000. Who's going to be able to afford that? Particularly if you're an investor and you've got a dilapidated home,
yep,
or you've got an older dwelling, an older home that needs a lot of work, and more so now than these insurance, because the insurance companies are not there to give money away; they're there to make money. Mm-hmm. So the cost of maintaining these properties are just going to go, through the roof. And it's going to get costlier. So, it's a wait and see. But the other question is, even if you paid $20,000, $40,000 in insurance per annum, which is, it's all, would you really want to live there and take the further risks?
Well, you've hit the nail on the head. Of course, there's a big debate about should they lift the Warragamba Dam wall, right, to, keep more water up into the Blue Mountains, right, up your way. But, of course, you got to understand that just below there, if you follow it down, there are all these acres and acres and acres of earmarked land for more future development, right? The last thing they want to do is to not be able to develop that land, right? So let's build a bigger wall to keep a bigger wall of water up there. But my question is, if we get another of these same sort of inundations that we've had over the last couple of weeks, right, that is not going to be enough to hold it anyway. So all you're doing is just spreading the problem even further. So I'm afraid that we need a whole different way of thinking about this. And I do think there are some areas where the right answer is to actually relocate people and stop allowing all this building on really, really low floodplain land and just recognise there are areas where it's not safe to build.
Look, you only have to drive on the M4 from the city all the way to Penrith, and you can see so much open space that could be built on. But again, there are too many governments, too many public servants that all the taxpayers are feeding, and they've got to have a reason to be there. It's an argument that we could go around and around in circles. I mean, I raised. I think I raised it on our show about 18 months ago.
Yeah, you did. Yep.
I recall about Warragamba Dam.
Yep.
There was a feud. There was a lot of pressure. Because there are developers that want that wall raised.
Yep.
That want Warragamba Dam raised, because if they raise it, I think it was 4 or 5 meters, then areas in the low-lying areas near there, near Windsor and all those areas, and closer to Blacktown, that will no longer be one in 50 year flood areas.
Yes.
They'll actually up it to 1 in 100, which means that they could build a lot more.
Yeah. Which means they only get 3 floods in 2 years rather than 4.
Exactly. But it's, look, and you know, then we're going to be dealing with droughts, Martin. We're going to be having to deal with hot summers and everything else, and around the corner there's already inklings of the new bug or mutated bugs, and that's a that's affecting population. So who knows what's going to happen.
Okay, so for your final thought today, your tip of the week is
Based pretty much based on these natural disasters, what's going to happen? I'm just at the tip of the week is look ahead, guys, and prepare for summer. Prepare for summer now. I really look. It's only logical to think that there's not going to be enough, power in the grid to if we get a hot summer. We use more power in summer than what we do in winter. We would be my novice's understanding of it, because everyone wants to use a fan, at least a fan, if not an air conditioning unit or air conditioning units, and fans and everything else. And there's only so much you can do in order to cool down. Whereas in winter, you can put on an extra pair of socks. You can put an extra you can put your joggers, your trackies underneath your jeans to stay warm. You can basically put a jacket on, put a scarf on, a beanie, whatever else, earmuffs, whatever, mittens, put another piece, another log in the fire just to warm up the place. You can get away with using less electricity in winter, but in summer, and given the base load is not going to be enough. I can already see a lot of power outages in around the Sydney area. So again, it goes back to our show. It's all about property rent, and again, it goes back to I think, Martin, that people are going to be still choosing, preferencing buying homes. Because you can do a lot more with a home in order to secure yourself for the unknowns in the future that are to come. Whereas, can you imagine the poor bastards in these dog boxes in high rise developments in summer when there's power outages?
Yeah, no lifts, no air conditioning, no ability to open the windows. Oh, it doesn't bear thinking about. And of course, the other point is that if you have a bit of land, you can always grow some crops. And grow some food, because the other issue I'm concerned about is the cost of food. I don't think we're going to see this coming back down anytime soon, particularly with now the floods in and around Sydney, that a lot of the growing areas are swamped again. So I suspect through the summer, we're also going to see more accelerated costs. So it's going to be pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah, look, it is. And again, it goes back to, I think, our followers and our the viewers, they know and they've understood that if you've got a choice between buying a buying an apartment or a home a little bit further afield, you make that choice. You make that bit of an extra sacrifice because there's too many unknowns in the future. I mean, I was told, Dusty told me today, apparently the bees have got the bug, and we're going to be out of honey in the near future. I love honey, Martin. I love honey. That, and my understanding is that in one of the Pharaoh's tombs or something, there was a pot of honey there or something or other.
It has great medicinal purposes. Honey, it can be used to
apparently
treat wounds and all sorts
forever.
Of things.
Exactly. I'm gonna have to go out and stock up on honey. That's the case. If the bees have got the crown, Martin, who knows? You can't even say I'm gonna have my own beehive, because those little bastards, they sting and they hurt.
You have to go around with a paintbrush and sort of, individually pollinate all of the all the flowers. I can see it now, Edwin.
It's interesting. So that's the tip. That's the rant. And let's see what shenanigans the industry gets up to next week, so as we could, as we can, keep on working on our on the new segment, Martin. What's wackier than a conspiracy?
Very good. Thank you, Edwin, as always. Very entertaining, and there's some really important points there as well. And we'll do it all again next week.
Most definitely.
See you later. Bye.